losing the first round, same idea. And State, in a sense, the same. You know, struggling all year long, put it together late in the season as Taylor knocks it down.
And that's it. Purdue, in pursuit of a championship, they will play for the national title.
You know, there's been some teams that have hung in there with them, and then they've separated from them. Then there's been some other teams that have just gotten flat out blitzed. You know, you have to be on your P's and Q's. You got to take care of the basketball. You got to be able to rebound. You got to be able to be good in transition. If you take bad shots and you turn the ball over, you're in deep trouble. It's a quick two or a quick three for them. They're probably the best I've seen in a long, long time in being able to take your mistake and make you pay for it. At times when you make mistakes, other teams, they're probably going to make you pay, but it's just not automatic. It just seems once that happens, it's automatic. Can't have those type of turnovers and those types of bad shots. Then you got to be able to guard them. You know, if you do those things, you got a chance. Doesn't guarantee success. You got a chance. But if you don't, you know, you don't have a chance.
40 seconds left.
And Bird, this is the best thing that could have happened to them.
Tested.
Be tested by a very good basketball team.
Spencer. It's a barrage.
Look at Danny over there showing everybody. They could just get after you and knock you out quickly.
The final score will not indicate how competitive this game was. Griffin ball fake, and it's tapped home by Nelson. And now UConn will trigger in. It's over. UConn is a machine. The Huskies will play for the national championship.
You know, playing certain programs, it's, you know, feels like a, you know, privilege because of, you know, what they stand for, how they do it, and, you know, how good they are. So, you know, to be able to play the national championship versus Purdue, you know, and how good they are and how Matt runs things, you know, it's a real privilege to play them for the championship.
I think it's shocking just based on what we've heard and what we saw going over the last couple of days of who was interested in the Arkansas job. And you look at Coach Cal, I mean, he is as cut through as a hire as you could possibly make. The name, the brand, the identity that he brings to a program that has a storied, rich tradition, an outstanding fan base in Fayetteville, Arkansas. To me, this is a shocking move. The timing of this move, as we are sitting here on the eve of the national championship game, and one that certainly will shake up things, not only in the SEC, but certainly in the Bluegrass State with Big Blue Nation.
You have about a six-second difference game in shot clock. Here's Clark. Will Iowa wind it down? No. That's why! A stunning opening quarter from Clark. She has 18, the most ever in a championship game quarter. Shot clock turned off, and Johnson picks the pocket of Clark. Raven Johnson lays it in. What a momentum buster to end the half. Clark, does she get it off? No, and that's how the first half ends. Johnson comes up with the steal and the score, and South Carolina takes its largest lead of the game into the half. Martin on the drive. O'Grady gets denied. Cardoso gobbles it up. Cardoso, 13 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 blocks. 2:40 to go. 6-point South Carolina lead. Here's Johnson. Johnson, the pull-up. No. Rebound. Snare. Cardoso! Unstoppable! Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
Yeah, it's certainly been a special year, and to be honest, like, after last year, I was kind of like, well, how do we top doing what we did last year? And somehow, some way, every single person in our locker room believed, and to be honest, this year was probably more special than last year. I'm just proud of our group. We never backed down, and, you know, we gave it everything we got. I think for me, is just the emotions will probably hit me over the next couple of days, and I don't have much time to, you know, sit around and sulk and be upset. And, yeah, I'm sad we lost this game, but I'm also so proud of myself. I'm so proud of my teammates. I'm so proud of this program. There's a lot to be proud of, but there's going to be tears. It is sad that this is all over, and this is the last time I'm going to put on an Iowa jersey. So I think just reflecting back and soaking in everything that I was able to do, because anybody other than me and Coach Bluter never thought this was possible.
I really would just like to say I have to congratulate Iowa on an incredible season. Awesome. And I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport, and it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games, and we appreciate you.
Renfro hits it deep into the corner. His first home run as a Royal, and he has a chance to tie it here. And he might do better than that. Deep right field, Grossman is all the way back. Gone!
MJ Melendez is on fire. Wow, he is recognizing his pitch and not missing it. That's the whole key. You can get your pitch, but lots of guys pop him up or ground him out, but Melendez is hot right now.
Sweep the White Sox in a four-game series. They get their first come-from-behind win of the year.
Yeah, it is tough, and that game was really interesting with, you know, Crochet, the way he was throwing. I mean, it looked easy for him, and his stuff looked really good. Pitch count was low and all that kind of stuff. But the second time around, our guys, the at-bats got better. Obviously, the home run was a big factor in getting us back in that game. But, you know, overall, the feeling is really good. It's a nice thing for sure. It's something that these guys were really pushing for. And the way these all four of these games transpired, they're all close, middle to late part of the game. And to stick with it is really, really cool to see.
Where's the WrestleMania highlights at? Huh? No WrestleMania? I can wait. No American Nightmare. Finishing the story. That's right, Kansas City. It's Eclipse Day.
Undertaker's back in WrestleMania. Cody caught it. Rhodes middle of the ring. Crossroads. Cody's not done yet. Cody with another crossroads. Is he going to do it? Can he do it? Is this the Rhodes moment?
Understandably overcome with emotion. We all are.
There you go. Now the intro is complete. Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez. And actually, that's it for the show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Monday, April 8th. Just keep playing this song from Bonnie Tyler. Scott Carroll, former Major League pitcher, Liberty native, will be in studio with us today. Jarrett Sutton talking basketball. Damon Bethea talking. He's just going to only talk about the Eclipse, oddly enough, at 9 o'clock. Can we just listen to the rest of this?
Absolutely. We can do whatever you want, man.
I like when he says, turn around, bright eyes. It's beautiful. brings tears to my eyes.
You guys ready for the craziness?
I guess. I read all the...
I don't know.
All the suggestions. Make sure your gas tank is filled. Make sure your phones are charged. Got and your, spare batteries are charged
your
up.
Faraday bags ready?
No. You're lucky if I'm awake.
Be a good time for now.
No, I will. I have my glasses for Sue and I, and so we'll be ready.
Ah.
154 is the peak for Kansas City.
I'm just going no protection, straight staring at
it. It'll damage. It could damage your, even if they said, even if you have sunglasses on, there could be some eye damage. So get yourself some
welder mask.
Some dollar Eclipse glasses at the... I got mine at IV.
Nice.
So, at my remote. Thank you to all the people that came out to see me on Saturday morning at the IV at 29 and 64th Street. That was a fun remote with me and Gabe Boucher. And I did get... They did have Eclipse glasses. 154... In the afternoon is the peak, which should be 89% Eclipse here in Kansas City. It'll start in the noon hour, and then it'll finish before 4 o'clock in the 3 o'clock hour. But the peak is at 1:54 p.m., so be ready if you are interested in that sort of thing. And my wife is, let me tell you. I'm lucky I'm not driving 5 hours to some locations that were suggested.
Arkansas?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very lucky. This isn't happening on a Saturday or my ass would be driving 5 hours for my wife. So
I drove up to St. Joe in 2017.
Yeah, we were up in Weston. Yep. Yeah, we had a little party. We're just going to go outside and look, you know, yeah. Today. That's all. There's a lot to talk about. I can tell you that.
Whew.
The total eclipse of the heart is one of them. So have fun today, people. Here we go. Almost.
Can we play the version from...
Nope.
No?
I thought about it. I wanted to.
Hangover?
No.
There we go. Turn it up. It's the best part. This guy always freaked me out in the video.
I can get that.
Very beautiful.
It's not the Hangover.
Wedding Crashers.
There you go.
Yeah. Beautiful song. So, the Royals are red hot. They won four in a row after the four-game sweep of the Chicago White Sox. They win 5-3. And now they are 6-4 behind Detroit, who's 6-3. Cleveland is 7-2. So this is awesome. The Royals are two games above 500. And look, it's hard in Major League Baseball to beat the hell even out of a bad team. You know, what you hope for is great, just win 3 out of 4. Against a team that's terrible, like the White Sox. To sweep them in four games, that's terrific. For example, right? Who's the worst team in baseball? Oakland A's.
Mm-hmm.
What just happened to the Detroit Tigers? Anyone? Anyone paying attention in class? They just lost 2 out of 3 to the Oakland A's. So just because a bad team rolls into town, there's no gimme, right? And the Tigers are ahead of the Royals in the standings. And they should have beat up on the A's, and they didn't. So don't just write this off, the White Sox are bad. So what? The Royals took care of business, and it's hard to get a sweep in a four-game series in Major League Baseball. And that's just what the Royals did. And it was a combination of a little bit of everything. You know, we've seen great starting pitching all season long and uneven performances from the bullpen. Yesterday, it was a reversal. Not a good starting pitching performance from Marsh. But who picked him up? The bullpen. Zerpa, Schreiber, Will Smith, MacArthur. They offered up 4 1/3 of scoreless relief. So there you go. Chalk went up for the bullpen. Marsh didn't have it yesterday. Gave up 8 hits, 3 earned runs, a walk, 3 strikeouts, and 4 2/3 innings. Couldn't get through 5. Passed it off to the bullpen. And the bullpen was able to hold the White Sox in check and allow the Royals to come back with 3 runs in the 7th, led by the red-hot MJ Melendez. As Nate Bucati has pointed out, MJ Melendez looks like a different guy. Looks like the top prospect that he was supposed to be when he came up. And this could be wonderful, because all that will do is lengthen the lineup. We've already seen flashes of excellence from Michael Garcia and Bobby Witt Jr. and Nelson Velasquez. We know what Salvi can do. We're all waiting patiently for what Vinny Pasquantino can do. And I do. I'm not going to panic on Vinny, you know, coming back from his shoulder surgery and getting his timing down and everything else. He's too good of a hitter. And eventually he's going to get hot. And he's going to have a game. He's going to have games like this where he carries a load. And he's the star performer like Melendez and Renfro yesterday. But to see MJ Melendez, hey, and again, Velasquez, 1 for 2 and a walk on base a couple of times. And then you take a little peek at Nelson Velasquez, who was, hey, we were excited about him for hitting all those home runs in a Royals uniform, but you don't know. But again, you look at what they gave up, Jose Quas, a 6-inning reliever, and you get a guy that could give you 30 home runs a year. Controllable, cheap, young, 25 years old. The upsides are very exciting. You take a peek at his numbers right now, 296, 367, 593. That'll play. Melendez hits the go-ahead home run. Look at his numbers, 323, 382, 742. That'll do. That'll work. You know, the lineup yesterday. And this is, you want to see Matt Quatrero, and you want to see his strategy and what he does. Loaded up with right-handed hitters against the lefty Crochet. Vinny got the day off. Kyle Isbell got the day off. Nick Lofton was in at second base. Adjusted the lineup. Ended up paying off. Hunter Renfro. Would love to see him get hot. He's too good to be as bad as he's been at the plate. He had a home run yesterday, and so that's a big deal. So, look, different way to go about getting that win. The bullpen and MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfro, the stars. You know, Felix Fermin gets in, or Freddie Fermin gets in for a start. He has 2 hits. We've seen that he can be good at times. As a good offensive backup catcher. And so, but that's what a good team can do, right? Good teams can find different ways to win. You've seen all these good starting pitching performances, some of them wasted because of the bullpen. Then you got your 5th starter that doesn't have a good performance, and the bullpen picks him up. And you get timely hitting and a comeback victory that culminates with a 4-game sweep over the White Sox. And, yes, the White Sox are bad, but that's what you do to bad teams. You beat them. So that's exciting, isn't it, fellas? 6-4 Royals baseball team. All right.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Let's go. Let's be competitive this year.
Good
be
way.
Interested all season.
I think they are. And so that is very exciting. And, man, we will talk more about this with Scott Carroll. I'm glad he's going to be in here. Whoever thought about having him on the show today, pretty sharp.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Pretty savvy.
I went out and had coffee with him last week.
Oh, I know. Both of you guys were sending me pictures.
Oh, boy.
Good hang.
Was it? For who? Who do you think it was better for?
Probably me.
Him or you?
Ah.
I let him know about the Federal Reserve.
See?
Though.
Yeah, I'm sure that he was really inquisitive about that. Yeah. And so, okay, and then you take a peek at the two teams that are ahead of the Royals in the standings, right? Detroit and Cleveland. Detroit just lost 2 out of 3 to Oakland. And Cleveland, and boy, here we go, knock on wood, but this ain't going to help. Early on, right, it's always interesting how storylines and narratives develop in a Major League Baseball season and what the theme is, right? Early on, what is it? Big-time injuries to big-time starting pitchers. Starting pitchers are dropping like flies, which scares the hell out of me for reasons that will not go just... Okay? Shane Bieber, out for the year, Tommy John surgery. It's significant. That's a team that the Royals are going to have to battle for, if they're going to battle for this division, that's one of the teams they got to beat. And that's a huge loss for Cleveland. So mark that down. Shane Bieber out for the year. But man, oh man, it's almost like every day you open ESPN.com and look at the MLB section to see which pitcher is hurt now in devastating fashion. So it's almost like who can stay healthy? Who can keep their pitchers off the IL, which is increasingly impossible in Major League Baseball. Like the Marlins did everything they could to keep Yuri Perez in bubble wrap and to manage his innings and his workload, and did everything you would by whatever book they were following, right? Out for the year, Tommy John surgery. So I don't know what you do. Now the finger's being pointed at, you know what, the pitch clock, making these guys speed up. And I look, there's not enough sample size, and I'm not going to sit here and say that's ridiculous. I don't know. Is it just to the point now that guys are pitching too hard, throwing too hard, and asking their arms and their shoulders and their elbows to do things that humans shouldn't be able to do on a consistent basis, and then you're asking these pitchers to do it even faster? Hurry up. Hurry up and throw that 99-mile-an-hour fastball. And so something's going on. And one after another, big name, big time, talented starting pitchers out for the year, the latest Shane Bieber. So we'll talk to Scott Carroll about that as well. I'm interested to hear what he has to say, and also what he has to say about the Royals sweeping his former team, because he watches both very closely. Again, tip of the cap to the person that thought of that. So timely. That's keeping your eye on the ball, baseball terminology.
I heard that.
The national championship game for men's basketball is tonight, and it's the matchup we hope for. I don't think that I'm going to get much pushback from anyone if I tell you that these were the two best teams this season all along. Houston could have had an argument, but Houston suffered too many injuries. They just did. And so, and then, you know, losing Jamal Shedd in the tournament, that was the straw that broke their back, and that was it. But even a healthy Houston team, if you tell me, you know what, they were the third best team this year, and the two best teams will be on the floor tonight. Okay, I agree. And you don't get that very often in the NCAA tournament. It's just the nature of the beast. You don't get it that often. And we're getting it tonight. Marquee matchup. I saw that, what, UConn was a 6.5-point favorite. It was at 7 last night. Some people are pushing back on that. I saw Jeff Goodman says there's no way it should be that big of a spread. And the people he talks to, there's a lot of people, basketball industry insiders, that think that Purdue not only will be competitive, but will win this game tonight. All right. I'm willing to see it. Let's see it. So it should be a terrific matchup. Purdue 34-4, UConn 36-3. The two best teams from college basketball this year go out and just find out who's best. And Purdue looking to put years and years of heartbreak behind them and win a national championship. And UConn looking to establish themselves as one of the great basketball, I don't know, like one of the great runs, but like this team is so different than last year's team. But just if they do this, and like Mike DeCourcy said on Friday, even if it's not by double digits, even though now they've won 11 straight tournament games by double digits, even if it's not by double digits, even if they just win it, and I saw someone, you might have to check this, Jake, one criticism, that you can't control who you play in the NCAA tournament, right? You don't schedule the NCAA tournament. But have they faced a 1 or a 2 seed in that 11-game stretch? See how long it takes Jake to look that up. And so I could understand that if people want to say, yeah, but they, you know, they've been able to do this and not, but man, they beat the hell out of everybody. But what a way to put the icing on the cake. If they're able to be, you know, a true number one seed, a badass team that at least on paper looks like they could be their equivalent. A real contender. And if they're able to do that and beat Purdue tonight, you got to put this two-game stretch up against anything we've ever seen. I know there's been other teams to repeat, but I mean like this. And Mike DeCourcy marveled at the turnover that they've had, and look at the job that Dan Hurley has done. They're right back where they were last year, as dominating in the NCAA tournament. That's just, especially in this day and age. I mean, it's different, man. This isn't, you know, John Wooden with a leather satchel of $100 bills just dominating college basketball. This is crazy what we're seeing. And so history is on the line tonight for UConn. And Purdue stands in their way. So that's very compelling. That should be very exciting. Looking now, it's 6.5. Depends on where you want to go. 6.5 or 7. That's the line right now for UConn as favorites. Yesterday, you could argue that we saw the two, probably pretty, you know, accurate, the two best women's teams all season long made it to the national championship game. And we saw South Carolina, again, chasing history, trying to become undefeated for the whole season, and Caitlin Clark trying to do what Iowa couldn't do last year, and she could do last year and win a national championship. Came up short. South Carolina, the final score not indicative of how close the game was. They pulled away at the end. They went 87-75. Caitlin Clark had, after the first quarter, they go, this is going to be Iowa's day. A magnificent first quarter where she scored 18 points, which was a record for most points in a quarter in a national championship game. 18 points in the first quarter. That's a 72-point pace. They jumped out to a 10-0 lead. It was 10-0, Iowa. South Carolina maintained their composure. South Carolina grinded. And look, you don't have to be a great basketball mind to figure out what happened here. South Carolina had way too much size period. That was it. They own the glass. Their offensive rebounding killed Iowa. How many times, if you watch the game, did you see Iowa play a pretty good 20 or 25 seconds of defense, force an outside shot, get a miss, offensive rebound, putback, score? That's devastating for a team to have that happen over and over again. And like in Cardoso, she's just too big. She's 6'7". There's nothing you could do. There's just nothing you can do. What did she end up with? 17 rebounds? 7 offensive rebounds? Kids had 10 rebounds? I mean, they out-rebounded Iowa 51-29. Iowa had 7 offensive rebounds. South Carolina, 18 offensive rebounds. I mean, that was it. That was it. Don't want to take anything away from the rest of the South Carolina team, but the difference in those two basketball teams yesterday was size and rebounding. South Carolina just absolutely imposed their will on Iowa. And it was, you know, too much for them to overcome. And they wore Iowa down, and it was like, damn, how many post players does South Carolina have? The depth, too.
Yeah.
Just rotating them in and out. But, like, nothing like Cardoso. I mean, what do you do? Like, what the hell do you do? You don't do anything. You watch her get offensive rebound and putback after putback and just kill your will. And then on top of that, you talk about the depth. You got a freshman, Tessa Johnson, who led the team with 19 points. I mean, out of nowhere. You know what she averaged this year? 6. And she was unstoppable. In South Carolina, a team that lost to Iowa in the Final Four last year, relying on so many freshmen, and basically it was a new team from last year. And so a tremendous amount of credit has to go to Dawn Staley, who... I saw someone put out her whole resume as player and now as coach. You put that up against anybody. Olympic gold medals, national player of the year awards. I think she made 6 straight all-star games in the WNBA. Now she has 3 national championships. And that there's only 5 coaches in women's basketball history that have at least 3 national championships, and now she's in that club. Name the other 4. You call it women's basketball.
Gino Auriemma.
That's 1.
Pat Summitt.
That's 2.
The coach at Stanford, maybe?
Yep. What's her name?
I don't know.
Vanderveer.
There you go. Thank you.
Last one's obvious. Come on.
Kim Mulkey.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, Mulkey.
And then Dawn Staley. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you that 3 is, it won't be 3 yeah. when she's done.
She's not done.
That's 3 with an arrow pointing up. And I'm glad that she grabbed the mic at the end there after getting the trophy and said those things about Caitlin Clark. Because I can be honest with you, I had had enough of former UConn players and former, you know, Lynette Woodard decided she's going to take some shots. I mean, like, the amount of hate towards Caitlin Clark, it got too much. And I saw, like, people say, hey, Iowa invited Lynette Woodard to an Iowa game and honored her and did all these things to her, and then she turns around and you know, just talks about her record wasn't broken. It just, you know, took some shots. And then Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird on their show just kept criticizing her. You know? Brianna Stewart, it's like, how about appreciating someone that has come along and elevated the sport that you love so much? That doesn't take away anything that you did. That doesn't make you any less great, because all the players I just mentioned were great players in their own right. And you can say, well, she just did it because social media. Who cares how she did it? She did it. She elevated this sport to where I'm talking about it right now in the opening segment today, because I know a lot of people watched it and a lot of people cared, and a lot of people watched it on Friday night when they beat UConn in a hell of a game. Because I know all Twitter was talking about was the foul that was called against UConn and whether or not UConn got screwed. Hey, that's how you know a sport's made it, when people are bitching about the referees for the rest of the night. Now they really made it. But what, that was the show Friday. That's right. Did you guys watch it?
Oh, yeah.
I watched all of it.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear anyone talking, debating the foul?
Everyone.
Of course. And talking, and even that, wow, what a game. Wow. And I will say this, it was a foul. And I know some people don't call it in that situation. I have to be consistent. As someone that said, hey, if you're holding Juju Smith-Schuster in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, go ahead and call it if it's a hold. So if it's a foul, it's a foul. All right? I must remain loyal to what I saw between the Chiefs and the Eagles. But was I mad? And I was rooting. I was rooting for Iowa, but I'm sitting there watching with my daughter, and she loves Paige Beckers and loves Caitlin Clark. But guess what? Why I was mad? We were robbed of Paige Beckers putting a shot up to win the game in the Final Four. It would have been a buzzer beater, and I think she would have made it, because Iowa was falling apart. They fell apart in that final minute. And so we were robbed as sports fans of what could have been a fantastic moment. Either her missing it or making it, it was going to, you know, everyone was holding their breath. And then instead we heard a whistle. But, hey, it's a foul. But she elevated the sport. It's real simple. She made a whole bunch of people that haven't really watched women's basketball or cared about women's basketball watch women's basketball and care about women's basketball. However she did it, that's the way she did it. And I just, like, I don't get the hate. She helped what you do. And even the former players, if you're a commentator now, you want more people to listen to you commentate, don't you? If you just talk about the sport, you want more people to care about what you talk about. If you're in the WNBA, you hope she comes in here and she's a superstar, because that will elevate your sport. Because very few people talk about the WNBA. And she will bring money and sponsors and eyeballs. And she could help elevate your sport. That's why the Diana Taurasi comments, well, just wait till next year. You're going to... Yes. Oh, shockingly, a rookie might struggle when they go to the pros. But, I mean, just like, she could lift, we'll see how powerful she is. Can she lift the WNBA till we talk about that? But still, like, she's helping you. She's helping the sport you love. What she did was fantastic. And to say, well, no, she can't be considered a GOAT until she wins, because she didn't win a championship. Well, go tell Larry Bird he wasn't a great college basketball player. That's ridiculous. So you're telling me if Caitlin Clark would have went to UConn instead, or South Carolina instead, or LSU instead, and surrounded herself with a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans and five-star players and only averaged 15 points a game, but played with a stacked lineup and won a title, then she would have been a GOAT. but because she only lifted this program to the point where they went to back-to-back national championship games and led the nation in scoring and played such an exciting brand of basketball that it made people pay attention. No. Okay. Whatever. Dawn Staley, she knows what she's talking about. Caitlin Clark's one of the GOATs. Amen. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Man, what a weekend in sports, too. We had the women's Final Four on Friday night. Men's Final Four on Saturday. Royals all on the way, earning a four-game sweep over the White Sox. Then the women's championship on Sunday. The men's championship tonight. And then in between WrestleMania, where I'm sure the anger and frustration that I have when I find myself in a text thread where there's these soccer conversations that I have no concept and understanding of. I'm sure Nate was experiencing the same thing as Jake, Lebo, and I were excitedly texting about what was happening in the main event of WrestleMania last night between the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, and Roman Reigns. But, I mean, dude, here's the deal.
You had two nights of it, too.
Right.
I mean, that was...
How long has it been a two-night event?
Never. This is the first year.
Oh, okay.
This, you know, Jason Kelsey came out
with Lane Johnson
to help Rey Mysterio Jr. I mean, two nights of WrestleMania. They get it now.
I was flying home with my buddy Brad Mertel, who was producing the game I worked this weekend, and he was telling me all about the Saturday night part of WrestleMania on the flight home yesterday morning. He showed me the video of Jason Kelsey. He was telling me all about it. So I learned a little bit.
But see, man, that was
Sunday.
That was just the
everything. Everything yeah. was
Sunday was,
it was all nothing
Snoop
compared
Dogg
to
coming out.
Well, see, I don't every. It was all nothing compared to the main event.
Yes,
someone made the best tweet last night and said, "I feel like I'm watching the season finale of wrestling, or even the series finale, because you're watching it." And, you know, you've got Cody Rhodes, who I get a kick out of because I was a fan of, you know, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. I was a wrestling fan back in those days.
Roman Reigns comes from such a great...
bloodline.
Great wrestling family. His dad was one of the Wild Samoans, who I'm, you know, Afa and Sika. I just enjoy watching. But you had, at one point... You're watching this thing, right? And I know there were other run-ins leading up to this, but you heard John Cena's music, and he runs in to interfere. And then you hear The Rock's music, and he comes in to interfere. And you're thinking, what the hell is going on here? And I know that you got to kick Jake out of the Shield, didn't you?
Of course I did. Yeah, but, you know. Cena coming out, and Cena and The Rock, you know.
But me just, you know, and everyone's going crazy. And then The Undertaker.
Forget about
making
it.
Making an appearance out of nowhere.
Forget about it.
Right?
A guy, legend.
But it was, like, cool because that was like, you know, that represented, like, Richie as a little boy and Phil as a little boy. And when they were still into wrestling, when I would take them every time that it was in Kansas City, it was like, here comes John Cena, here comes The Rock, here comes The Undertaker. So that was nostalgic. That was pretty cool. And then Jake thrilled that Cody Rhodes wins the championship, weren't you?
I was. First time for the Rhodes family to be undisputed champions of... The World Wrestling, I guess, entertainment now, but Federation. It's the Federation. Wow, it was great. I thought, I mean, the writing, I mean...
What?
The storylines.
How about the deep storyline, the deep storytelling of Seth Rollins coming in as a member of the Shield?
Yes.
And right there, Roman Reigns, clearly the right choice is to hit Cody Rhodes again with the chair.
Right.
But he's so overtaken with anger
by Seth.
Because Seth Rollins showed up as, you know, dressed as a member of the Shield,
yep.
that he hit him with a chair, and ultimately that's what cost him.
Absolutely.
He took his eye off the ball, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Coachable moment if you watch with the kids.
And I love Seth Rollins. I'm a big Seth Rollins fan.
Well, he got the hell hit out of him with that. He hit with that chair, and he was gone for a while. He's still trying
down.
To help him. But the point
they're
is,
they're trying to find him.
Supposed to hit Cody Rhodes.
Right.
This is Bloodlines rules, baby. So
hit Cody Rhodes and finish him. Anger and rage got the best of them.
For some reason, I'm a big fan of Bayley, so I watch that.
Yeah,
mess. Sure. She had a bad knee.
Yeah.
She battled through adversity.
Put that belt up.
I watched the Logan Paul match, too. I was tickled when... I liked when Randy Orton beat the hell out of the Prime Bottle. That was pretty much the peak for me.
That was one of the highlights of the night.
There was a little Prime mask of the Prime Bottle dancing around, you know, and
harassing him.
Yeah, and he messed with Randy Orton one too many times, and Randy Orton put him through that table.
I was rooting for Randy Orton.
I think when he kicked him, that bottle went flying. They said it was some famous streamer, and I didn't know who it was. To me, it was just the Prime Bottle. Yeah. He got his ass whipped. So
the bottle with the face.
I was thinking, Jake must like this. Randy Orton's beating the hell out of a mascot right now.
Yes. This is definitely a highlight of the night. Because I like Randy Orton. I mean, he's...
Of course.
RKO, baby.
Well, Kansas City native Cowboy Bob Orton.
That's right.
His father.
That's right.
Who main evented the first WrestleMania. So thank you. So there. Were all the texts confusing?
A little bit. I mean, I can't say I know all the storylines real well. So, but I recognize some of the names you guys were texting.
Yeah, but you would have you would have appreciated with Cena and The Rock and.
Oh yeah, and I was a big fan of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes back in the day. That was my time of
the son's the wrestling. American Nightmare.
Yeah, I get that. I saw the video of him. Boy, guy could barely stand up. It was such a.
Right.
Such a taxing affair.
It was. No, it really was.
He was emotionally overcome. He won the belt. It was powerful.
You want to see video?
Can I ask a stupid question? Was it pay per view? Like, what was it?
No,
Peacock.
That's one of the cool things about Peacock.
Man, awesome.
Peacock. Yeah. And like, I remember we talked about
They've been on it for like 3 years.
People were bitching about what game was on Peacock? What Chiefs game?
The Chiefs Dolphins.
Chiefs Dolphins.
And so, and we weren't kidding. We were like, well, if you have Peacock, you get to see all the big WWE cards. I mean, that's part of it. So if you wanted to watch WrestleMania, all you had to do was have Peacock.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's great. I used to hate paying for the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
He beat the hell out of this.
No, I was interested when Brad was telling me about it. He's not the right guy to beat up.
No.
That's the Prime Bottle.
Yeah. Well, he was the Prime Bottle. Not anymore.
He got his ass kicked. So.
Yeah, he did.
Those are the things I like, so.
Well, we got to have my buddy Kevin Patrick on the show sometime. He was the play-by-play host of Monday Night Raw for quite some time and did some Friday Night SmackDown. He's a good buddy of mine, so we got to have him on the show sometime.
I wanted to go to bed so bad, and that main event lasted so long. I was like, please.
Well, how are you supposed to anticipate that? I mean, you never know what's going to happen in a live sporting event.
Then I was so glad because I would have been pissed off if I would have woke up the next day. Who ran in? And then who? And then
what?
Who?
What?
And then who?
And then the bells, lights are off. It's a taker. It's great.
I wish that would have been Stone Cold.
Me too. But
that did, I know, but instead of a chokeslam, they needed to be a stunner, but that's all right.
Right.
That's fine.
Because, you know, what was it, 25 years ago, rocking Stone Cold, it's their first match 25 years ago in Philly, I think.
I went to the Omni in Atlanta to watch Ric Flair and the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Wonderful memories. With my dad. All right. Oh, and by the way, in case you're looking for another tasty, juicy headline, John Calipari's leaving Kentucky to be the Arkansas
wild,
head coach.
Man, wild.
The NIL money, baby.
All the crazy talk by Arkansas fans of the coaches they might hire? Not so crazy.
No.
By all accounts, Coach Cal, I mean, first of all, I mean, Arkansas is a good job, and he, it's what he believes, and he believes it's a good job, and he's getting paid a whole bunch of money. He's going to have a whole bunch of NIL money. But I've seen several reports that he was so sick of the criticism, and he was miserable in Kentucky. His people just, they had had it with him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And just think about this chain of events that just happened. Kentucky is losing their coach to Arkansas because Arkansas lost their coach to USC because USC lost their coach to SMU. And that's how this all happened. Roger Sherman tweeted that out. Jeff Goodman tweets out, the names to watch right now for Kentucky. Nate Oates, $18 million buyout. Scott Drew, $4.5 million buyout. Bruce Pearl, $7 million buyout. Billy Donovan, he's in the NBA. Yeah, I think I might pick up the phone and I might make Nate Oates say, hey, you know what you're doing at Alabama? Well, we care about basketball. Come on over here. Let's see. We'll also make your life a living hell if you don't win a national championship. I'm going to tell you this right. You come here, we're going to pay you a lot of money. We'll treat you like a king for a couple of months. But you don't go to the Final Four your first year. Your ass is grass. We're the lawnmower. We good? Shake. All right. Done deal.
But then another vacancy is coming open.
The honeymoon will be here for you about 45 minutes. And then you better have a five-star recruit landed within an hour of you landing your plane here in Kentucky.
So the cheapest buyout out of all those is Scott Drew. Could you see him going to Kentucky?
You can see anyone going to Kentucky. It's Kentucky.
Yeah.
Now you have to know, you have to be willing, you have to have the thickest of skins, because they will be pissed immediately.
Yeah.
Just miss out on a recruit or something.
If I'm Arkansas, I'm making Danny Hurley tell me no.
If you're Arkansas, why? You just got John Calipari.
If I'm Kentucky.
If you're Kentucky.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like that's a great fit.
No, but I mean, you make him say no.
That'd be a very quick conversation,
yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah, I think he'd say no before the phone call was even made.
That's fine. I'd still make him say no.
Sure.
Because he's the best going, man.
You know what? I might call the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes right now and see what he can do. I mean,
I know. That guy's going to be in an ice bath today. I saw the
tremendous staff, right?
He's tired.
Let's take a break. Back into this on WHB.